It's time to give your computer repair business website a much-needed makeover. Check out the new Tech Site Builder 2. Save 20% by going to techsitebuilder.com/Linux.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux the Rest of Us, episode 131. This is a show about Linux. We cover news, all sorts of topics, software, hardware, anything that tickles our Linux fancy. I am Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Supercoop, and I have my regular co-host with us this evening, my good friend, Steve McLaughlin, a.k.a. Door-to-Door Geek. How's it going, Door?
Going pretty good. Kind of crazy, hectic week, but in typical fashion, it's completely all self-imposed. The kids were healthy, so I was happy.
Good.
The wife was healthy, so I was happy.
Good.
So I'm happy.
Happy's good.
Yeah. And when they're happy, I'm happy. And when they don't complain, I get to sleep peacefully.
There you go. Yeah. Cool.
So everything was good for you. We had a week off. I had a lot of catching up to do, so I asked if we could postpone. I guess you use your time wisely.
I did. As some of our listeners know, I'm helping with a lot of the Podnets behind-the-scenes stuff, and we got quite a bit of stuff done, made some headway in some areas that we've been trying to get some headway in. So, yeah, I didn't sit on my laurels, man. I got right to work, and it's been fun. But other than that, yeah, I've been staying busy. One of my phones, the contract is up with Sprint. Tomorrow is officially. So I'm investigating some new mobile options, and I hope
the Windows Mobile, right?
Of course. Hey, man, that Nokia. Yeah. Speaking of that, I will say, you guys won't believe this. And I'm gonna make this quick. I saw a good Windows Mobile commercial.
So did I. Where they were fighting
at the wedding.
Yes.
That was a good commercial, okay? But the one thing that made me very upset about that commercial was the fact that it said number one rated mobile phone by Engadget.com listener or users or whatever. And I thought, well, I'm not reading Engadget anymore.
Thank you.
It must have been that. They must have had that in the Nokia N900, like, as the options to vote.
Right, exactly.
I don't know. Yeah, but whatever. It's a good device. Yeah, no. No one knows mobile for me.
Good man.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, to end that quickly, I hope to be on Android App Addicts within the next few weeks to speak about some of my potential options if I haven't made a choice by then. So stay tuned for that.
Very cool.
And we also have a guest this evening, our returning guest, one of the few, and hopefully, well, I shouldn't say hopefully, I know, in fact, it won't be his last appearance. Our good friend Kevin O'Brien from Hawaii Linux Fest and many other places. Kevin, how's it going tonight?
Oh, it's just great. Couldn't be better.
Good. Good. Fantastic. So, what have you been up to lately since your last appearance?
Well, let's see. I have been working on Ohio Linux Fest stuff. We're trying to get more talks, get people to put in proposals to speak there. So that's one of the things we've been looking at. We're trying to recruit some additional people to help us out with things. And, you know, at this stage of the year, that's pretty much what we focus on there. And then I've been recording programs for Hacker Public Radio.
Oh.
So it's a continuing thing. And just spent the weekend at a thing here in Michigan called PenguinCon, which is a convention that's both science fiction and Linux.
And
did a two-hour presentation on LibreOffice there. So
that sounds awesome. And that kind of thing is right up my alley because I'm a big sci-fi guy, and of course I like Linux, otherwise I wouldn't be here right now. So I'm gonna make a very soft commitment to going to was it PenguinCon?
Mm-hmm.
PenguinCon 2016. I'll try to make it.
Yeah, it's an annual event here, and it's always, you know, somewhere around end of April or first weekend in May, somewhere around there.
Very cool. Well, and speaking about your need for talks for OLF 2013, I will be helping with that burden. My proposal is I've been reviewing it, and here's my suggestion. And this is not my way of roundabout getting away, like casting multiple votes in like a sweepstakes. But let's say a person who wants to submit a talk is torn between two Should they submit both?
Sure. And, you know, chances are we'll pick one.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. But if, and I don't know if that's been done before, and I wouldn't expect to be brought up for both unless, you know, something horrible happened where you only had one person submit for a talk.
Yeah. Generally speaking, A, you don't want to have one person doing a lot of talks because that doesn't get you the variety.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I had something like that happen to me with PenguinCon. I gave them two different talks and said, choose which one you want. They scheduled both of them.
Oh.
Yeah. So I was, like, down there for 4 hours in a row, and I got back to them right away and said, it ain't going to happen. So pick one.
Oh, wow.
And I mean, it was a two-hour presentation as it was, but that's about as much as I'm going to do.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'll keep that in mind, and I'll have something to you shortly. Yeah.
By the way, I was listening last week with Chad,
mm-hmm.
and seemed to me he was sort of hinting that he might have a talk idea. And so if he's listening to this, Chad, get your proposal in there.
I'll definitely forward that to him. Yeah, if anybody's good at arm twisting, it's me.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, I want to take this moment to mention a great Podnuts product that is, of course, TechSite Builder 2. TechSite Builder 2 for techs who need a website or their computer repair business but don't know where to start. I can speak from personal experience. When I had my computer repair business, I put off getting a site because I just thought it's too expensive and I don't know where to begin as far as making it worth my time. But the original TechSite Builder really did help me out. I can speak to how well it did for me and how it took a lot of those hurdles right out from under me. So it definitely does help. This, however, is updated for the modern day. There have been many updates, and I mean, the landscape has changed as far as what the tech needs, you know, as opposed to 3 years ago. TechSite Builder 2 is much more SEO-friendly, completely customizable, updated graphics, improved structure and layout, brand new Google AdWords tutorial, which is beyond worth it. If your first proper utilization of Google AdWords now and your first job that you get based on that is going to pay for this product and more. So if you go to techsitebuilder.com/Linux, you will be given an exclusive discount as a listener of the show. So if you are in the market for such a kit, check it out.
Yeah, and I'll say it's based off of WordPress, which means really customizable, really easy to update.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the SEO part of that, that's worth like triple the money right there, because when you go out and pay $500, $1,000 for a site, what you're half paying for is the SEO knowledge of helping someone get you ranked higher. And that's what you get with this. And it's like personal handholding. I really can't encourage people enough to at least go check it out.
Mm-hmm.
Give it a look over. If you have questions, email Steve. He will answer every question completely. You'll get an idea of his level of customer service that way.
Definitely. Well, very cool. Okay, Dor, where would we like to start since we do have a guest?
Well, have no absolutely no basic. So I wanted to ask Kevin a little bit about PenguinCon really quick since he brought it up.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard of it before, Kevin, but not really. I've heard people mention it, but no one ever talks about it. It seems like a secret society kind of thing. And I thought because of the lack of information I heard about it, it was a small fest. But you said there was roughly about the same amount of people as at OLF.
It felt like that.
That seems to me to be a decent amount. Now, this is a shared convention, sci-fi
right.
and Linux. So
right.
I understand if there's not as much people, at least that I'm listening to, talking about it. Mm-hmm. But I have to believe there was at least some good things besides, of course, a great talk on LibreOffice. I'm sure there had to be at least something else there good.
Oh, yeah, there is. The interesting thing is that I'm like Cody. I'm a science fiction fan. You know, if you were really old school, you might look at my domain name and say, oh, I've seen that one before. Because it comes from science fiction. And yet, when I go to PenguinCon, more often than not, almost every talk I go to is technology or science related. It's not that I'm not interested in science fiction. It's just that there's always, oh, I want to, you know, I went to one, you mentioned WordPress, and I went to one there and learned a few tricks about WordPress that I didn't know. You know, that was kind of interesting. Yeah, there's always tons of stuff. Went to a talk on security, fellow who was explaining that basically you take a look at all the big websites that get hacked and people's information gets taken and things like that. And he said, well, it's basically because the people who are building websites have no idea what the hell they're doing. And he was saying, you know, at some point, maybe we need to have a certification program and, you know, to be a certified web developer that says that you actually understand what proper security is.
Yeah,
it was being interesting.
As being a guy that's made websites before, I utterly agree with them. The word security, the idea of security, never comes into even the thought process until you try to, like, protect directories for, like, membership purposes only.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, the actual, like, knowledge about security doesn't exist to a web developer at all. Dare I say, a web developer should work hand-in-hand with a system administrator-type person or a software security expert or so, because, I mean, there's the great thing about WordPress is everybody's using it. The bad thing about WordPress is everybody's using it.
Right.
So it's, you get tons of help, you get tons of plugins, you get tons of guidelines, you get tons of help, but you also get tons of people looking to hack you because it's WordPress. It's everywhere. I mean, it's unfortunately a lower hanging fruit than like Joomla or even .NET Nuke or something.
Right. Also, the Sunday Morning Linux Review did a live broadcast from PenguinCon,
cool,
which is the second year now that they've done that. Which,
well, I guess I got to ask, were they drunk?
No. Although you would be forgiven for suspecting something when Matt wound up with his back flat on the floor. He has a bad habit of tipping back too far in chairs.
Gotcha. Oh, I read something about that. Yeah, I'll have to. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he and I have a friendly rivalry. So, of okay, sorts, but no, he's, let's say I really like Tony and Mary's work. I'll say that.
Oh.
And I'm only saying that, assuming that he was listening right then and is now fuming.
Damning with faint praise, yeah. These guys are friends of mine, and, you know, they come from the Metropolitan Detroit Linux Users Group and Washtenaw Linux Users Group, which are, you know, right next to each other. So I'll go and speak at their lug, and they'll come to our lug. And Matt did a presentation for us on SSHFS last fall.
Ah, cool.
Yeah, so it's, just one happy family here.
Very cool. Yeah, I will say... SMLR is one of the cast I enjoy listening to, partially just for their banter, their back and forth, because they constantly like have inside jokes with each other, but we're on the inside too, and they like to once in a while rib each other, which is always good.
Yeah, it is, and they do things that no one else does, and that's good. I mean, you want to find a niche. If everyone does the same kind of programming all the time, then, you know, why do you want to listen to five different podcasts that are covering the same stuff?
Right.
So they seem to have carved out a really nice spot there. And, you know, things like Mary's distro reviews. You know, yeah. I listen to a lot of Linux podcasts. I don't hear that. So,
well, and when I do, it seems very dry. It seems like very, they're reading off the feature list kind of thing, where Mary gives us an actual from beginning to end usage experience, which I really like a lot.
Yeah.
And you know that she, you know, went in there and installed it and stubbed her toes on it and all of that stuff, which makes it real.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I know that if that desktop does not easily let her switch to left-handed mouse, we will hear it.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I know if they don't offer KDE as a alternative desktop, we will also hear it.
Exactly.
And that's okay.
I love that show so much, I actually have Matt's laugh as my ringtone.
Oh, my goodness.
You're a very demented man, Cody.
I love scaring children. I don't know.
That would do it, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. We got to move on with that one.
Anyway, since I was the Segway King last episode, how about this? This just popped in my head. I met the SMLR folks at OLF 2012.
Indeed. They were down there to do a recording, and I wouldn't be a bit surprised if they don't do it again this year.
I'm sure they will.
Yeah, and I just hope they bring bagels because I missed out on them last year.
Yeah.
If they bring the bagels, we can get some bacon and we can make those hangover sandwiches we were talking about earlier today.
There you go.
Dude. Kevin, okay. This needs to be question number one for any guest we bring on. Kevin, are you pro or against bacon?
I try and eat my body weight in bacon every year.
Okay, you may continue.
You may continue.
Well, the thing is, I do not eat carbohydrates.
Oh, there you go. So you need the protein. There you go. That's a good, yeah.
So, you know, I go to a local restaurant here that has a breakfast bar, and I'll get a big plate of salad and then a plate of bacon.
Oh, nice.
That'll be my breakfast.
There you go.
Well, yeah, I'll just say I'm happy we live in separate towns so we don't accidentally meet at the same restaurant and compete over bacon.
Actually, my wife eats as much of it as I do.
Oh, wow.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Okay. I wanted to bring this website up actually last week, and I didn't get a chance to. And I did get a chance to show it to Chad. Now, just a quick rewind. Chad is a very enterprise-centric server network guy.
Mm-hmm.
He understands more about networking than I know I ever will, and he understands even more about servers, all servers, that is. And I showed him this website, and he said he was genuinely impressed by a couple things. A, the look of the site, the feel of the site, the facts of the site, and the information available on the site. And it's called LinuxHomeServerGuide.com. Never heard of the site, never stumbled across it at all until like about a week ago. And what it is, the guy is basically giving you on this site the entire arena of Linux home servers. And he has like a default master build that he can then expand upon if it is a web server, a game server, a media server, or whatever different kind of server. But he goes through a lot of detail, and he does talk about to virtualize versus to not virtualize. He goes into a lot of topics like that I really found useful. He kind of admits like he's not the Mr. Know-it-all everything. This is his this is what his experience tells him. But I found it to be, in my opinion, what I thought to be pretty accurate. And he goes through, gives more than a couple step-by-steps, more than a couple screenshots, more than a couple commands that you can run to get things done. I found this site to be, I don't want to say complete, but really good. Really good. If you want to do a Linux home server of nearly any kind, this, to me, seemed like a really good place to go and have fun.
Yeah, it looks great.
I'm going to have to check this out. I'm looking to completely overhaul my home. Well, I've been saying this for too long. I'm overhauling my office. It's in progress. But yeah, I want to set up at least one server in here, and it will be Linux. So yeah, definitely have to keep this on the... I'll put it in my pocket feed. Check it out later.
Very cool. The couple media servers I just want to throw out there. BitTorrent media server, auto download media server, so whenever something becomes available, it'll automatically download it. iTunes equivalent server, a Twonky server, Twonky's pretty powerful, and a PS3 media server, so you can set up these different services and then access them from other computers, whether it be iTunes media playing, whether it be Twonky doing video sharing kind of thing, or a PS3 accessing TV shows, YouTube videos, or what have you. So let's just say this one is definitely bookmarked. You know, I'm going to have to come back to this one more than a couple times, I'm sure. Very cool. This next one I wanted to throw out there, I don't know if you guys have ever heard of Khan Academy.
Oh, yeah.
It basically, a single guy started up doing videos. He didn't proclaim he was the center of education or knowledge. He merely was teaching people about things that he thinks he knows about well. Okay. He got a lot of attention. He had a lot of content. Bill Gates himself, I believe, gave him like more than $500,000, just gave him money said, keep doing what you're doing, do more of it. I like the fact that they are basically also working on here a Raspberry Pi server for Khan Academy curriculum. So what this is giving you the availability to do, hypothetically, is go through the Khan Academy, pick up stuff you like, put it on your local network with this Raspberry Pi software, and you can host your own content for family members, friends, whoever, so they don't have the insane amount of data to go through with the Khan Academy, and you can take it completely offline. I just thought this was really cool. I like seeing tools used to help learn besides just play video games, which seems to be the popular thing right now. So I just saw this, and I like seeing Khan do extra stuff. And I just thought this was really interesting. I didn't get a chance to actually check it out on my Pi, but I really want to, and I would love it to see this being used a little bit more widely, I'll say.
You know, you said that video games are the popular thing right now. I was just reading something today that says that they're becoming less popular.
Good.
I mean, so, you know, if you look at the financials, you know, Nintendo's not doing well. Sony's player isn't doing well. You know, Microsoft's Xbox sales are slowing down. Game companies are not selling a lot.
Well, but all three of those can... Well, the Sony and Microsoft arguably could be explained because of their new consoles launching later this year. No one wants to invest in the hardware or the software for the quote-unquote last-gen consoles and games. So yeah. Because if
and the Wii sucks.
No comment on the Wii U. But
in my opinion.
But I also, yeah, Nintendo did take their first quarterly loss ever during
not this year, not this
ever
century,
in the history of their entire company during the launch of the 3DS. So yes, from a financial standpoint, the profits are definitely ramping down, but it can be explained with what's on the horizon. Because if I could speak to this, if there's one group of people that I know are very frugal and I wouldn't say wary, but are very smart about where they put their dollars, for the most part, it's gamers. And with the landscape getting ready to change as it is, I could see a lot of people holding on to their money and taking a step back and looking at what's going to come out.
Yeah. Tighten up and just wait. And I'll say, I don't want to see games fail, let's say. And that wasn't what I was trying to imply. I just get almost a little bit upset when I see a Kickstarter thing for something fairly pointless in the grand scheme of things, yet they get multi-millions of dollars pledged to them.
Sure.
And then you have something like Sonar Linux, where he has a hard time getting $9,000.
Right.
I believe games are going to be here forever. I would like to see there be maybe less number of games and maybe just a little bit more quality, which I know is saying a lot because quality is in the eye of the beholder.
Oh yeah.
And these systems, I'm afraid what these next gen ones are going to cost. That's why when it comes to cheaper systems, I seem to be a little bit more antsy towards that. And honestly, I can see taking the Raspberry Pi, a Bluetooth controller, hooking up to the TV and telling my son, here's video games. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he'll be happy for at least a little bit. I mean, when he goes over his friend's house and sees the Xbox 720 or the PS 4.5 or whatever, he's going to want one of them. But, you know, I can only do so much. I'm just one man.
Yep.
I got that right.
Oh, man. This was the one thing I really wanted to bring up, and I was really hesitant to bring up, because I don't want people to read it completely wrong, but I do want people to be scared a little bit by this next story, okay? We know, we should all know, no operating system that has permissions to read and write to a disk and execute files from the same disk it can write to can be secure. It is technically, feasibly impossible to be completely secure. There's a lot of things operating systems purposely do, and there's a lot of things OSs don't do to be safe because it's convenience. And with Linux, we've been doing a lot of things that I think are good for safety, security. I've been slowly raising my voice over the last year, year and a half, asking people, don't install third-party, and third-party driver isn't even the right word. Don't install closed-sourced binary video drivers on your computer, i.e. don't install the NVIDIA package. Don't install the ATI package. I understand the near instantaneous twitch of the wrist to install it right now, because you think you need it. I beg people, try to use your computer without it. See how usable it is or is not. And I like Intel graphics. They do fine by me. I'm not a high-end gamer. If you do want to play high-end games on Linux, I now have a valid point to ask people, do it on an isolated machine. Do high-end gaming on a Linux computer where you don't do bank stuff, where you don't do mission-critical stuff with sensitive information on it, because the binary blob of the NVIDIA driver, that black box, there was a vulnerability exploit exposed to it where you could get root access on the computer via a video driver. Mm-hmm. I'll just say I'm sure by now it's fixed. There's no doubt in my mind it's fixed by now. But you're putting faith in a company that's goal has nothing to do with security. NVIDIA does not care about security. They care about getting good performance for video, and that's it.
Sure.
So the next time you boot up your computer, you install your operating system, and that pretty little notification pops up saying additional drivers are available, stop. Just stop. Stop. Ask yourself, do you really need them? Try to live without them, because you are technically safer without them.
Yeah, and to my mind, there's two points that this really raises in my mind. The first one is Linux is relatively safer, but it's only safer if you follow safe practices. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I like using Linux, but, you know, I do not run as the root user. That's just an unsafe practice. I do not set up my computer to automatically log me in without a login screen, because it's just not a safe practice. There's always a kind of a trade-off a little bit between how convenient everything is and how safe it is. And you only need to lose all your data once to start thinking, you know, was it really such a big deal?
Yeah.
And the other thing that occurs to me is, I know there are a lot of people who like to make fun of Richard Stallman. I'm not one of them. He keeps pointing out, you know, when you put your freedom at risk, things like this are going to happen. And
yeah,
he ends up being right more often than not.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Now, I'm going to almost assume something. I'm only fairly confident in part of what I'm going to say here, not the whole thing. Linux itself today is generally not as safe as Linux way back in the day. Way back in the day when you wanted to install a piece of software, I believe you actually had to log out of your computer and log in as root to install software. Then they developed the command su, which would allow you to temporarily go in with a pass and do whatever you wanted to do. That technically made things more convenient, i.e. less secure. Now we have sudo, where you type in your user password and you get root access. This is another convenience. Technically speaking, this is another thing that makes Linux a little bit unsafer. So we got to be aware when we're typing in passwords, what happens, the full impact of it. And I'll say there are certain distros where you're intended to run as root, like Puppy. My logic is Puppy is not geared for a new user. They are lighter, they are quicker, they are easier, but they are meant to be used by more knowledgeable users who are comfortable with running as root. So I highly encourage you, to be honest, if you're on a Puppy-based system and you're a newer user, don't put in sensitive information, because you never know when something is going to hit your box, technically speaking.
It's very true.
Yeah. But with that said, Intel graphics have came such an insanely long way in the last year and a half, even.
Oh, yeah.
I believe now they have true 3D drivers for Intel onboard graphics. Of course, they're not going to run as good as an NVIDIA card. They also cost an extreme fraction of the price. But I believe they even have, which is now coming out, Left 4 Dead 2, on Linux running with Intel graphics. It's not as good, but at least it runs.
Yes, they are. I'm just going to say my piece on that right now. Once that officially goes live, you're going to need to schedule a host for a couple weeks, because I'm going to be busy.
Well, I believe that's starting next week. I believe this is the week it's going to be out.
All right. Well, it's been nice talking to you folks.
Yeah.
If for some reason you're really paranoid about the zombie apocalypse and you need a good training simulator, you need to play Left 4 Dead 2. It's amazing.
Well, Dor, give me a call, because I won't be playing it.
Gotcha. Very cool. We go to a related kind of thing. Okay. To install NVIDIA and ATI graphics on a modern Linux distribution, it is a very GUI interface. With the Intel drivers, because they are technically open, they're usually in the kernel. We don't even have to install them. But one thing that's now starting to catch up on us is that means we typically have drivers that are not the latest and greatest, because most of the time kernels are not willy-nilly pushed with updates. You usually go a little while, get an update, go a little while, get another update. But you can now, via a GUI application, install the latest Intel video drivers in Linux via a GUI. There's a brand new package, software, application that you can get in this article over at omgubuntu.co.uk. You can either type a single or copy-paste, because everybody copies and pastes from the internet, including me. Go to this page, copy and paste that link into your terminal session, super quick in a terminal session. Paste is control shift V, copy is control shift C. Or you can just click the little link right there in their webpage, and you can download and load the latest Intel drivers on your Debian Ubuntu based system with very little work. I like the idea of it. If I actually played games, I'd probably need it. But, you know.
Well, I have an AMD-based desktop and an Intel-based laptop, so I'll get to try the new Intel graphics drivers on my laptop and see if Left 4 Dead 2 will handle it. If not, I'll have to rely on the ATI drivers on my desktop.
I'm sorry. That's all I can say. You're going to be really mad.
It's okay.
Because it's not good.
I'll make it work.
And I honestly can't remember if I put this next one in here, Cody, or you did.
I did. I've been sort of collecting some home network security articles and just exploring pieces of software I've heard about over the last couple of years that I finally have the time to kind of say, hey, what's that all about? And one I heard about a while back was Snort. And Snort is a piece of software that you can install on your network to help protect it. And we have a great link here in the show notes from linuxuser.co.uk. And Snort, and I may be way off base here, but Snort and, see, I was listening to Source Trunk, another great open source podcast. If you guys haven't checked that out, definitely do. But he had an episode recently on Tripwire, which kind of reminded me of how I understand Snort. But if you're looking for a nice a Linux-based piece of software to determine what is trying to access your network and how to protect it, definitely check out this article or just check out Snort in general. Have you ever used anything like this before, Dor?
Actually, I did. I used Snort itself. I was in the process of learning kind of thing. A friend gave me an infected Windows computer. So what I did was I put it on my network. I loaded up another computer, put Snort on it, and I was able to sniff the packets as they went by in the network, and I could see that computer and the domains it was trying to connect to. Okay. And let's just say I was amazed at the sheer number of connections this box was trying to make. And I had no idea what I was doing, and I could see it was literally trying to make like over 50 connections every minute or two to all kinds of different IP addresses and servers that were all outside of the country.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's kind of nuts.
But all for legitimate purposes, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Legitimate spyware, legitimate adware, legitimate Trojans. Yeah.
It was probably just a bunch of different like SETI servers it was trying to connect to.
Exactly, exactly.
There you go.
They just wanted to get accurate time on the computer, I'm sure.
There you go.
Yeah, so this is the kind of tool that you really can, if you get modestly good at this tool, pretty good at this tool, it is a easy gateway to getting a good paying job.
Very cool. So yeah, check out Snort and also check out Tripwire. Between those two, yeah, even like Dor was speaking to, he didn't really know what he was seeing, but just by being exposed to those sort of logs and watching something like this work, you do gain quite a bit of knowledge. So I'll report back on that in the near future.
Right, and I'd say really quick, Source Trunk. Mm-hmm. I had an exclusive deal with a Belgian podcaster, but this is another Belgian podcaster. So now I know two Belgian podcasters. The biggest difference between this Belgian podcaster and the other Belgian podcaster, this Belgian podcaster enjoys his beer immensely. And the very beginning of every episode, he gives you an ultra good descriptive review on the beer. I mean, I can literally like see and taste the beer the way he explains it. And I'm jealous that he lives in such a beer rich part of the world.
And he's also very honest during those reviews. I believe in the Tripwire episode, he was drinking something and he did not like it.
Right. Well, he was first like, it tastes very, I don't like it.
but then he went into detail. So, excuse you, Kevin. That slight review was almost like a Valley Girl sipping on a Zima. It's like, I don't know. It wasn't that bad. But go check it out for yourself. It's a fantastic show.
Absolutely. Yeah, even though I can't remember his name to save my life, but he's a good guy.
No, yeah, I can't remember either.
And he's halfway around the world, so he can't hit me. He's too far away. Okay, this next one I had to bring up because I honestly believe when this does become mature, companies like GoToMeeting and WebEx, they're going to have to basically find something different to do to make money, or they're going to have to offer extremely different levels of customer service along with their tools. Okay. Apache Foundation basically made a little bit of an of advancement with open meetings. Open meetings is essentially a quote-unquote open source. It's a Apache-licensed piece of software that can enable anyone to basically do their own go-to-meeting, whether it's inside of a private network, on a private LAN, or over the internet. I fully, honestly expect this within maybe 2 years. It might take 2 years, but I expect this to be competitive. I'm not going to say very competitive, but at least competitive, because I do understand GoToMeeting and these other solutions do offer more than just a remote interface, but they're going to have to start doing more innovation quicker here soon enough, I believe.
And what better to fuel that innovation than competition?
Exactly.
There you go.
So what would that do that Google Hangouts don't do?
You could host it yourself. You could do it on your own private LAN. Its real intention is supposed to be desktop sharing with voice conferencing. I believe the video conferencing is, I don't want to say an afterthought, but that's not the main objective to it. It's more of a go to meeting. They have like go to seminars, go to classes, go to something. They have another product, but
Support one, right? Go to support or something like that.
They had like a training specific focused one for a while. So this is more of a web conference versus a group video call, where Google Hangouts is a group video call. This is web conferencing.
Okay. Yeah, software. I'm just curious.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, obviously I like Google Hangout because it's all on a web face. I don't have to worry about it working. It doesn't use Java. It doesn't use anything weird like that.
Right.
That's where it looks like this is going as well. So it technically, I think, will be as easy for end users to use as Google Hangout. It's going to be definitely in the beginning a lot of work to get it running right on a server, because you're pulling in a lot of different technologies to get everything working right. They definitely made advancement, I will say that, because they took this over about a year ago. And everyone said it would take a while for the initial hurdles to be over.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Kevin's question is very valid, because if you're not familiar with it, and if you are familiar with how Google Hangouts have sort of matured over the past year, you might be asking yourself that question. Well, what is this offer that Google Hangouts doesn't? So, yeah, very, very good question.
Yeah, and, you know, there's a rule that you don't get anywhere by being 10% better.
Right.
You got to come in with something that's 100% better, and then people will switch.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, and I think maybe the most direct way I can put this versus Google Hangout is Google Hangout is like a chat video hangout, and the open meetings, I guess, would be more of a presentation type solution. So, I mean, technically geared towards different audiences, even though the crossover would be huge, which, yeah, on the internal LAN, I can see this being initially popular just because you don't have to go on the outside. But to really, truly compete with the GoToMeeting and the Google Hangout, I have hope that it is possible, but, you know, time will tell.
Good to have competition.
Always, always. This next one I wanted to bring up, even though I could honest to goodness care less about it, because it's a RPM-based distribution, and I think we all know how I feel about that.
Hater be hating.
But, I fully acknowledge the role CentOS and Fedora play in the Linux universe. They are, you know, the beginning of everything seems to come from there. Especially when it's a wide-ranging system thing, like SystemV was used in Linux systems for the longest time, and now it looks like at least CentOS has switched over, and I believe other distributions, it's only a matter of time, are going to switch to a upstart system. In the Windows world, I cannot even come close to rationalizing what this is. In Android world, I can't even come close to rationalizing what it is. It's basically a framework that handles the booting process, the system starting up processes, the system restarting processes, and the system logging for those system services. It's that framework. And Upstart, by looking at this over at openlogic.com, to me looks actually pretty easy to do, where you basically do, like, you can do a pre-start script, looks fairly easy, and when you want to launch a brand new process, you basically do a stop. It looks at least closer to English, I'll say, than systems in the past. So if you hear Upstart and you want to know what it is, why it is, how it is, because it's going to be, I think, affecting a lot more distributions here as time goes on. This article over here at OpenLogic, to me, at least seems like a decent article.
Very cool. Yeah, I'm looking over this, and yeah, it seems to be in plain enough English to where even I'd understand it, and that's saying something. For this kind of stuff, anyway.
Yeah. It's just one of those things. It's inevitable. It's a matter of time. The only constant is change, and this one's going to change, too. Now, this next one, I'm going to give it a little preface before it. If you're doing this on an SSD drive, I think, technically speaking, it will, quote-unquote, age your device. It's probably not going to age it even by a couple days if, hypothetically, it would last for 60 years. I don't think it would honestly even take a couple days off of an SSD, but technically speaking, it's a couple days off of 60 years.
So real quick, just be wary, and if you want to hear someone speak, that's a good knowledgeable person in the field of hard drives. Door recently interviewed Scott Moulton on a new episode of My Hard Drive Died.
Well, that man knows more about hard drives than I'll ever know about anything else.
There you go.
It's very damn near scary.
And it's a good episode, and I'm glad to hear that show revived, or you're doing a great job.
Thank you. Now, I'm looking at this, and I think I now feel quite safe in saying it looks like most of this is at least reading from a log file that's already in existence, or from a D message, which is a back channel stream of data. So it doesn't look like it actually puts any more work on the computer that doesn't already exist. So that's good. What it is, it's basically a very quick way to measure the speed of a SATA device from the command line. We all know what the motherboard box says. We all know what the hard drive is spec'd at, but we would like to verify if these speeds are in fact being reached. If you're on an SSD, or if you're on a 10,000 RPM drive or 15,000 RPM drive and you are paying for extra speed, I think you need to come to this link over at linuxarea.com. and verify your speed. The last thing you want to do is spend the extra money for the other thing and come to find out you're not getting it. Yeah. And I do like that they actually link to Stack Exchange, where they basically go through very, very similar steps so you can find out exactly how fast your SATA drive is moving.
And here's something that I tell friends and family now when they ask me about hard drives, and something that I always told my customers when I had my business. You know, you see a lot of, and if you're in the market for this will be good news for you if you don't already know. But you know, you'll see in your big box store ads, you know, oh, this great external hard drive and it's super cheap, and you're like, hey, that's cool. But you never know what kind of actual hard drive is inside those things. You know what I'm saying? Like, unless it's like an actual like Seagate or Western Digital, in which case I still won't believe it until I crack the thing open and see that sticker on the drive.
Well, but even then, I do believe there were some SATA 3 drives where unless you went on the bottom of them and pulled out a pin, it would only perform at SATA 2.
Right. Right.
So even if the box says it, even if it's a genuine company that's doing it, you still might need to do something else to get those full speeds.
Yep. So it would be good to have this be used as reference if you're looking at purchasing a drive, or if you have, if you're looking at buying multiple drives, you know, if you were to get one and test it, if it meets your specifications for your specific need, then you know what to purchase more in quantity of.
Exactly.
Good find, Dor.
Thank you. That's definitely a keeper. Basically, every time I reformat, reinstall, I'm going to do this just to make sure that something is not quote-unquote happening funny in my kernel. Okay, now this next one, I'm kind of misunderstood what it is, but I don't care, it's still cool. over at LinuxNix.com, I had the predicament where I was thinking about, and I had somebody else ask me about, recording terminal sessions. And I said, well, recording, I keep thinking video recording is fine and dandy, but it's not accessible. Okay. The last thing I would want to do is find a great tutorial with video in it explaining how to do something on the command line and then turn to like Jonathan and say, but you can't enjoy it, Jonathan. I don't think it's cool or it's smart to have terminal based things not accessible, because that's, I think, one of the benefits to the terminal. So this article over here, if you install a BSD tills, it will enable you to record your terminal session as a text file. So if you go through steps for something and you want to share it with somebody in a fully accessible way, you can use this tool, record your terminal session, do all those steps, and when you're done, you basically give them that TXT file, and they'll see every command that you typed, one right after the other.
Okay. Yeah, no, I do like that, and I will say, when I've been looking at tutorials for the command line, sometimes, depending on what it is, I've watched videos on certain how to do certain things, and then also written tutorials like on a website. But to actually have someone who has done exactly what I'm trying to do and have their actual session to use as a reference, I think that's great.
Yeah, and it does look like it literally basically takes everything, if I'm not mistaken, from the command line itself and actually dumps everything. So they see your ID. They see everything that you saw, which I think is just really good, really beneficial. I can see that being a great training tool, especially for the newer users. Yeah, definitely.
Well, there's a place for audio and video there as well, though. I'm thinking of, for instance, Dan Washko has been doing a series, Linux in the Shell, where he explores individual Linux commands and all the things you can do with them. Dan did like 4 shows just on the top command, all the stuff you can do with it. And he records audio on Hacker Public Radio, and then he also does a video. I think it's on YouTube, that's sort of capturing his session as he goes through it.
Yeah, and I'll say each one of his shows is essentially 3 shows, because he has full text written up that is more than most people's blog postings, and the video is like a mirror of the actual stuff. And it looks like, yeah, it does look like it is being basically coming straight out of YouTube, so I'm sure if you're even are a touch crafty, you can go to Dan's personal channel, which looks like youtube.com/user/Dan, D-A-N-N, if I'm not mistaken, or Dan's23, and you can get all his stuff. Definitely, I mean, if you want to learn more about the command line than you could ever. I think all you got to do is just hang around Dan for a little bit.
Guy knows his stuff, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, but he obviously puts a lot of work into each of those episodes. And it's, I think he does one every couple of weeks. So it's an impressive piece of work, and I commend him for it.
And I believe that is linuxintheshell.org?
.com or .org? I'm not sure which.
.org.
Okay.
Very cool. Okay, now, just to show that, you know, fair and balanced, whatever that means these days, that there are gaming things that I do bring up. And I will say, this is a two-parter. I really have two-parters. The first one is Jedi Outcast and Jedi Academy are now GPL V2'd, which means anyone can basically go download these games. I know they're not the newest of the newest games, but I also know they look really good kind of games. This is not some slacker, you know, pinball game or something cheesy like that. These are actually fairly high-end games. Now, I will say, a lot of people, and by a lot of people, I basically mean everyone who is normal, will need hand-holding getting these to work. Thankfully, and I cannot say this enough, thankfully, Venstone and the crew over at Linux Gamecast did basically a full write-up with step-by-step-by-step-by-step commands you have to enter, things you have to download, and things you have to run to get this working on your computer. If he wasn't out there doing these kind of things, this is the kind of information that would literally be all over the internet and nearly impossible to find on sites that rarely get updated. You know, Ven, I can honestly say, is doing maybe the best job with Linux gaming, keeping everybody up to date and informed as possible that I've seen since I got on Linux. And the thing I'll throw out there is his show is not family friendly, and it's not supposed to be family friendly. So if you listen to it, do not be shocked. Ven makes no hides nothing about not being family friendly. It's not his goal. His goal is to just have fun in his way, talk how he wants to talk, and basically be utterly impartial about games.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want Jedi Outcast, can't encourage you enough. LinuxGamecast.com does have all the information. And as always, this is all in the notes. Speaking about Ven reminds me to say it's in the notes. Because he says that like 8 times an episode. It's in the notes.
Yep.
Yeah, I saw him post about this earlier in the week, and I got to tell you, I was excited. And yeah, if you guys are looking at doing any gaming on Linux, definitely check out that show because it is good. And with the range of topics that they cover, and also like they actually show gameplay footage during their show. So watch it live if you can. And if you are not already, go follow Ven Stone on Google+, because even some basic tech news articles that he will post, he always has a funny little quip to include when he posts. So very, 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 very good person to follow on Google+.
Yeah, and I'll say a couple more things about Ven. One, if you want to get his attention, just say something negative about Doctor Who. Trust me, you'll have his undivided attention. But two, he is the only person on the internet I know of with the cojones, with the fortitude, with the whatever you want to call it, to have his complete broadcasting system running on Linux from beginning to end, and is streaming live to Twitch at, I'm pretty sure it's 720p, which is a resolution a lot of people I hear say is impossible. I've learned, never tell Ven something is impossible. This guy has as much no quit in him when there's something he wants to do. He will literally hurt someone if he cannot figure it out, it seems like. So if you want to see top quality Linux screencast of games, he is also the guy for that.
I can attest to that. Yeah, he definitely has some problem solving. Specifically, when I spoke to you earlier, he also, I don't know if he currently uses an AMD rig, but he was using an AMD gaming machine for a while and gave some tutorials and tips on getting some of those ATI drivers really working to get the best out of that hardware. So I appreciate that.
Well, I can say he has multiple boxes. The one he always talks about on the cast is the box where if it doesn't work on this box, you as a game developer are doing something wrong. Mm-hmm. It's a Ubuntu 32-bit with a NVIDIA graphics card. But I know his co-host running a completely dead distribution, Fuduntu, is on ATI and weekly. They rag on him. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Now, did you want to go into Left 4 Dead a little bit?
Oh, I just basically put that in as a reminder to mention that, yeah, Valve, when they were talking about Steam on Linux, they were using their... In Valve not only makes Steam, but they also have, in case you don't know, they have their own like main gaming franchises, one of which is Half-Life, there's also Portal, and then Left 4 Dead as well. Well, they were using a lot of Left 4 Dead 2 footage to show what Linux could do and how well Steam could run on Linux, but it up until recently it was still not available through their Steam. I want to say it was a winter sale. I bought the entire Valve catalog for a very good price, and so I just have these sitting in my Steam account, hoping that one day soon we would finally get to play. I would finally get to play Left 4 Dead natively on Linux on my machine without having to run it through Wine or some other way, like, you know. But yeah, it's happening. The beta has launched or is launching soon.
I believe it's this week. They kept promising in a week, and I believe I heard it on Friday when I kept hearing that.
Oh, cool. Well, I'm just super excited, and this takes me back to my days when, you know, 10, 15 years ago, before, you know, wife and kids, I played in a Counter-Strike clan, which is based off of one of the... Counter-Strike is a game based off one of their other games, Half-Life. And I was a PC gamer, man. I had, you know, my whole rig set up. And I'm investigating ordering a mouse specifically so that I can play Left 4 Dead to where I want to play it again. And yeah, it'll be the first time I would play that game on a PC as opposed to playing it on console. So I am super, super jazzed. And I'm serious when you're going to need another co-host for the next couple weeks. I'm only half serious. I can set aside 90 minutes a week. If I can set aside 90 minutes a week to sleep when that goes live, I can set aside at least 90 minutes for the show. I'll do that
exactly.
For you, Dora.
Exactly. Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I'll be happy to at least chip in and partially buy the game because I know it's going to make you giddy.
Oh, yeah. Well, I already own the game, but I need to... I mean, a couple tiny pieces of hardware, but yes.
Buy you a cushion for your seat.
There you go. Yeah. I would say some liquid caffeine, but oh
yeah, I know.
Darn. Okay. Well, Kevin, I want to touch base with you on a few other things here.
Sure.
Now we're already starting. Now, I mean, basically, I started talking about OLF 2013 to Dor on Voxer on my way home from OLF 2012. So
right.
I'm a big fan of the fest. And last time you were on, I sort of pressed you for any information, which you didn't have any at that time. What can you say? And you kind of spoke to it earlier in the show where you guys are at with your process right now, which is sort of typical to year to year. But what would you like to say about OLF 2013 to our listeners at this point in the game?
Well, I believe we have confirmed one of the keynote speakers, and that's going to be Robin Bergeron, who is the community leader for Fedora.
Oh. Very cool. I'm sure Dor will be there for that one.
Oh, you'll betcha.
Uh-huh.
Are you going to be selling tomatoes in the back aisle?
Come on.
No, I'm just kidding.
I like Robin. She's one of the people I follow on Google Plus and Twitter.
That name sounds familiar. I'm gonna have to. I'll search her out and follow her. Cause yeah, I gotta say, I used Fedora 18 for about a month, and it was above and beyond what my experience with either 13 or 14 was. You know, way back when. And from what I've heard, with the changes they made to 19, as far as the alpha that's out right now, especially the graphical installer, it's looking to be a quite solid release.
Yeah, well, you know, I think most of the distros are getting better over time.
Oh, of course. Well, go ahead.
I just got to defend myself super quick. Hello, Bruce Patterson. Hello. How are you doing, sir? Hello, Jonathan Adu. Hello. How are you doing? Very good, sir. I will let you know those laptops did not work flawlessly up in Northeast Linux Fest. In fact, one of them did not boot properly and GNOME would not load. I'm just saying. On the last Linux Basics, they both felt it necessary to make fun of me and my Fedora endeavors. If no one doesn't know me yet, I break everything. I literally break everything I touch. You know, I'm walking down the street and, like, you know, a button flies off my shirt where it's not even buttoned. It's just, I break everything. So, of course, when I installed Fedora 18, oh man, stuff started breaking right away, right immediately. Just stuff stopped working. And, of course, they blame me.
Is that why you got nervous when we were walking through that convenience store when we started walking by the eggs?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was afraid they would start just cracking randomly.
Yep.
But there was one of those laptops up there that just, I'm just going to say, just did not boot properly. Now, being a Linux OS, Cody quickly used his brain and was just able to log into XFCE instead of GNOME.
Yep.
So thankfully, there was a backup ready and willing and able. But, I'm just saying, it just didn't work perfect. I love you, Bruce. I love you, Jonathan. Linux Basics 127, I believe.
There you go. Well, I'm looking forward to that talk, especially as a keynote, yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Same convention center.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be the Greater Columbus Convention Center, and the dates have been set. Did I give you the dates?
I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but September 13th through the 15th.
That sounds about right,
yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm planning my flight from the 12th to the 16th.
Yeah.
There you go, yeah. Yeah, because, yeah, I was very impressed with the Drury last year, which is where I'll stay this year. But, yeah.
I'll probably be staying there as well. It's my favorite.
Cool. At the moment you guys are kind of in need for more talk submissions. There is a date set for when you will stop taking submissions, isn't that right?
Well, it's a couple of months off, but yeah, I mean, there is a point where we have to cut it off and start putting a schedule together.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, get them in now. You know, we've been open for a couple of months, taking in these talks, so.
Okay. Well, I would think it would be beneficial for the person submitting the talk to get it in earlier, therefore they'd be able to have more time for consideration.
Yeah, and you know, when we're putting something together like this, we're looking for a balance of things. Ohio Linux Fest attracts a number of different people. You know, we get the beginners, and you know, we saw last year just how important it is to have things that are aimed at the beginners, because we had a whole day of stuff, and you know, Dora and I were both part of that day of training for the newbies, and that room was packed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were people standing in the back, they were going out the door, you know, trying to get close enough to listen. And that was even happening for a session on the command line, which supposedly will drive people away. But people wanted to hear this stuff. So we know we're going to be doing more of that. But by the same token, we have to have something for the people that have been coming to Ohio Linux Fest for a number of years, who are the professionals. And we know that's another big thing. So the Ohio Linux Fest Institute, where we do training on Friday, you know, that's going to attract you know, quite a few Linux professionals. So we've got all of those people coming. And, you know, one of the things that we're constantly getting is people that are saying, well, you know, you didn't do enough of this, you didn't do enough of that. No two people can agree on what it is we didn't do enough of.
Right.
Right.
So, you know, it's you know, some people come there and it's like, well, you didn't do enough gaming. Well, you know, we had, you know, three different talks, but, you know, apparently that was all you wanted was a whole day full of gaming.
Right.
So what we're trying to do is say we're going to have Linux. We're probably going to have some BSD, have some hardware. We're going to be hearing from major companies. So, you know, your IBMs, your HPs, you know, Rackspace, you know, companies like that are probably going to be down there presenting what they're doing. The career track was something we did for the first time last year. That's on again. And the fellow Warner Moore, I believe his name, put that together and ran it last year, was very successful, and he's enthusiastic. He's working on getting it together again this year. So those of you who are Linux professionals and want to have an opportunity to interview with companies that are hiring, or just one of the things Warner did was he got some people to come in and just talk about stuff like, you know, how to put your resume together to get the best possible job, how to orient yourself in the job market, all of that. Now, it's a good job market right now for Linux people, but it never hurts to give yourself every edge you can get. So that's something that we have. You know, we're going to be talking about, there'll be a few things. We're going to be talking about patents and copyrights and CISPA and all of that kind of stuff. We can't get away from it, really.
Yeah.
So we're going to have all of those things going on, just as we do every year. And when we put together a program, what we're looking at is trying to achieve that balance. So, you know, the more talk submissions we have, the easier it is for us to put together a balanced program. And that's really what we want to do. We want to make sure everyone has something. So that's where we are right now. I say I've only got one confirmed keynoter at this point. I think we're very close with another one who, you know, is going to be very interesting. Mad Dog is going to be there.
Cool.
You know, we wouldn't do an OLF without Mad Dog.
Yeah.
It just wouldn't be right.
It wouldn't seem the same.
Yeah. Yeah, and I love Mad Dog, and I think most of the people at OLF love Mad Dog. He always fills a room somehow, you know?
Well, I could speak to that point specifically, but I can say that I had a couple opportunities to have some one-on-one conversations with him at OLF last year. And, yeah, the guy can bring his breadth of knowledge to literally any subject, and it's amazing what you will start to talk to him about. Like, if you'd asked me if I thought I was going to talk to Mad Dog about these two or three things, I would say, how would that ever come up? But they did, and I learned so much from him, even in the short time I was talking to him. So for him to have a prepared talk, it's, and I've seen that twice now, it's even a step beyond that. So yeah, if you have the ability to ever see him speak about anything, just do it.
Oh yeah, yeah. He's a wonderful speaker. In fact, I have been working on all of the audio recordings and got to listen in on the audio of Mad Dog's talk from last year yet again. It was called The Perfect Storm.
Yep.
So I get a chance maybe this weekend. I'm going to start trying to upload some of those things and, you know, post some links, make them available to everyone.
Well, Kevin, you just let the wind out of my sails because I was in a grill on where all the OLF 2012 audio was. But
yeah, well, that was interesting. I learned a lot. So there were various things we were trying to do, and I think next year is going to go a lot more smoothly because I have a much better sense now of what I have to work with and what it takes to put it together.
Okay, well, good. Well, that's all you can do, really, is just, you know where you want to go, try it, and then learn from the experience and move forward, right?
Yeah, yeah. And one of the things I'm really hoping to do, we've got someone working on the website, and I'd really like to get as much of that stuff available on the Ohio Linux Fest website so you can search for these things and, you know, locate the talks that you're interested in. We have audio from a number of years. It's all up on archive.org, but I don't know how easy it is for people to find that if they don't already know what they're looking for.
Right,
so
yeah.
We need to have that on our website.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, yeah, putting it online is one thing, but putting it online where people can actually find it is another. So, I agree with you there. You could just say, well, it's on my own cloud server. Yeah, well, where is it? Oh, I don't know. You know, yeah. I hear you there. Well, that's good to hear. Aside from all that, when we were talking about bringing you back on the show, and I'm only asking you this now because I forgot to mention it before, but was there anything that specifically you wanted to bring this time around that we hadn't talked about yet?
Well, I did have something. You know, I was listening to your discussion with Chad Wallenberg, and I really enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Chad's a great guy. And you know, I remember one point he was talking about Dore's presentation on, you know, I've installed Linux, now what do I do? And he was very vague about, you know, where Dore did this somewhere, I don't know what. And I wrote back and said, well, it's Ohio Linux Fest.
No.
So I'm listening to the discussion last week, and Chad makes some really good points I would agree with. One of them is that if you're looking at the enterprise space, and, you know, I work for the IT department of the state of Michigan. You know, Chad's in the IT department of a major university. So, you know, we both see what's going on there. And it's probably true that Windows owns that space to a large degree. Or Microsoft, I should say. It's not just Windows. Because Microsoft is a really good enterprise software company. And that's, I think really that's the core of their business now, is the enterprise software market. But where I will disagree a little bit with Chad is, you know, I think his attitude was, use whatever works for you. It really doesn't matter. I will disagree with that. I think it does matter. And the reason is that, you know, if you want to be in control of your computing life, there are certain things you have to worry about. And I think free software is part of it. I don't know if you've ever noticed, we were talking about Mad Dog. Have you noticed that he always refers to free software?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You almost never hear him say open source or any of that stuff. It's free software.
Yes.
And that's a very revealing thing that he puts it in those terms.
Very deliberate verbiage when he speaks about it.
Oh, exactly. Yes. Speaking, yes. Writing, whatever. He's always talking about free software. Mm-hmm. And it's clear from what he's talking about, he's not talking about dollars and cents. He's talking about freedom. And that if you don't act to protect your freedom, at some point you don't have it. It's as simple as that. And one of the things that I got to thinking about, recently there was the whole thing with Google Reader, which was, you know, if you follow blogs, I follow a lot of them.
Oh, yeah.
So Google Reader was one of those things I used every day. And when Google said, oh, we're shutting this down, it was like, oh, you know, you can't do this to me. Now, I've since moved on to Feedly, and I'm happy with Feedly. It does whatever I need to do. But I started thinking about what gets me into that position. Google is a very large company. And they probably looked at it and said, oh, you know, there's only 10 million people using Reader. It's not worth it. Because for Google, 10 million people is not enough to bother about.
Right, right, yeah.
Right, and that's just that. I'm not saying that as a moral judgment. I'm saying that as simply a statement. This is a giant company. They can, if they can't get at least 100 million people onto something, it's really not worth their time.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the responses I heard from a number of people is we need something to come along to take the place of Google Reader that should be just as universal. And that's when I started to think, you know, that's probably a bad idea. One of the things we know is that monoculture is bad. You know, if everyone uses the same piece of software and then that company says, eh, we're not interested anymore, then everyone's screwed.
Yeah.
If everyone is using the exact same piece of software and there is a vulnerability, a security problem, again, everyone's got the problem now. I think you have a healthier ecosystem with what I would call boutique software. What does it look like if a development team can find a million people who would pay $3.99 for a piece of software? Well, that's basically $4 million. For $4 million, could you get three or four good developers to work for a couple of years to produce a product that would appeal to that million people? I think you could. I think there's a place for that, but that $3.99 matters. And one of the things I was hearing, and I'm going to tie this together because in my mind it all makes sense. Google did institute something in the Android Play Store that they took out the ad blocker. Ad block was in there. And Google said, nope, violates our terms of service, you're out.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a number of people got really upset about it. I didn't. I thought, great, they should get it out. Because there's a huge difference between being bombarded with unwanted ads on a website and what I think a lot of people do, which is... I want to get the free ad-supported version of this app on my Android phone, and then I want to put in an ad blocker so I don't see the ads.
Right, but right.
Most of those things, you can get the paid version without the ads for, you know, about $2.99.
A very, very minimal cost, yeah.
It really is. And so really what people are doing is saying, I want this stuff free of charge, and I don't care if I screw the developer, and... You got to wonder, that's not a sustainable system.
Mm-mm.
You know, one of the things people point out is that, you know, there are more Androids than iOS devices.
Oh, yes.
There are more apps in the Play Store than there are in Apple's App Store. But Apple's App Store is where the money's being made.
Right.
And that's why developers, by and large, if they're doing something, they'll always do it for Apple first. And then if they get around to it later, they'll do it for Android. I think that we as users, consumers of software, we need to support the developers. If we don't support the developers, we don't get the software. Everyone's got to eat. Everyone's got to pay the mortgage. You know, it's no different. And it's not that much. For most of these apps, so I would rather pay a little bit for an app that I use, you know, use the free one and put up with the ads for a couple of weeks until you know whether or not you want to spend the money on it. I'm not saying throw money at apps you don't like.
Mm-hmm.
That would be stupid. But the ones that you do like, support them. And if developers see that they can make some money by producing a good, useful app, we'll get more of them.
Right. No. Yeah. Because it's a much higher ROI there, and it's worth their time, and they can expect that return on investment. Yeah, for sure. Going back to kind of a point that you made earlier when Chad was speaking, and he made a good point, and this isn't a knock on him whatsoever, but for him to state a fact that for the most part, Windows does, or Microsoft, as you pointed out, does sort of dominate that arena. Well, it's one thing to just say, well, yeah, this is the way it is, and to just go along with it, but what correct me if I'm wrong, what you're kind of saying is you that may be a fact, but it's only a fact perpetuated by the fact that you're not trying to look for alternatives.
Well, I think that's a big part of it. I mean, at this point, I'm not even sure anything in open source is going to come along and make any kind of a dent in that market. You know, if you are working in a place that is standardized on Outlook and Link and SharePoint and Office and all of these kinds of things, there's no open source or free software package that does that.
Right.
As
right.
far as I'm concerned.
And I was just using that as an example to just let people know. And I mean, it's pretty obvious, but yeah, if you don't like the proprietary tools, you're doing yourself a disservice if you're not trying to find alternatives. Now, he openly said that he has tried open source alternatives to a lot of the things in his day to day, and he does use some of them and he doesn't use others. So at least in that respect, you know, he in that one instance looked at his options, tried to investigate something that fell more in line with his beliefs. But at the end of the day, he needed to get the work done.
Yeah, it's not a huge disagreement I have with Chad. Mm-hmm. It was more a matter of emphasis, I suspect, than anything else. I think that actively looking for ways not to be under the control of proprietary software is worth some effort.
Oh, I couldn't agree more.
And I would, even if the free software didn't have quite as many features as the proprietary, I would probably go with it just for the sake of supporting free software.
Okay. When you were speaking about doing the ad blocking in the apps, what I've seen is that they kind of have some applications who are doing it right are doing the kind of the freemium model where they will have, it won't be 100% full featured version of the app with ad support, but it'll be close to where they get a real feel. Mm-hmm. But then also saying, oh, by the way, if you pay your, you know, $2.99, $3.99, $5.99, whatever, you also get these. And that's a great model. And I can speak to the fact that I've tried a lot of those apps before. And within a day or two, I'm like, well, either it suits my needs or it doesn't. And yeah, it's not that much to try that. In what we were speaking about earlier with gaming, that's an even much more of a problem with all the gaming piracy. I read a great article today, which and I love to see companies, either software developers or game developers, combat piracy in a very creative way. The one I read about today was really cool. There's a game which basically puts you at the head of a game development studio, and they purposely altered a portion of the game and then released it online to be pirated, to do a sort of a social experiment. But in the pirated version of the game that they released, one of the things that you have to take in consideration while you're running your virtual game studio is piracy. Mm-hmm. But that part, that concept within that game was only available in the pirated version. So now they have all these people in their forums looking for tips on how to combat this and getting these discussions started, but they're outing themselves as having pirated the game. Right. And based on that data and others, they've determined that only 6% of all the people that are playing the game online actually paid for it, mm-hmm. which is quite fascinating. And I think about the like some of the apps that I've purchased or games that I've purchased just for Android, I'm thinking, you know, like Tasker, Dog Catcher, several games. But at the end of the day, I mean, yeah, you're talking like just pennies. Based on what it's going to do for you as far as, you know, productivity hours, you know, saved, or just overall entertainment. So yeah, support the developers wherever you can, because I got to tell you, there hasn't been a single piece of software that I've switched to Linux where I've just thought, that's way out of my reach, I'm never going to buy that. At the most, and the guys on Android App Addicts have always ribbed me because I think I brought the most expensive Android game to date on that show, but even then it was only $25. And if you think of $25 for a video game, that's nothing compared to like a console title.
That's cheap.
Yeah. And if you break it down, hours I'm going to get it for enjoyment for that $25, it's still pennies. So yeah, Dor, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't it Ryan Ridenour recently who said that he just recently, after having an Android phone for a year, finally paid for an app and it was Dogcatcher?
Yeah, he basically said he thanked us for constantly harassing him, not intentionally, but on the show to buy applications, that after owning an Android device for over a year, he finally went and bought an app. Part of it was, I don't think he wanted his credit card to be tied in with Google.
Well, I understand his hesitance with that. And not only for security's sake, but I'll say my son has got a hold of my phone and he's starting to, I mean, he's not even two yet, but he's already starting to do some things. He bought a couple apps last week. Because my phone was hooked up to my debit card, no more. But if you are apprehensive about that, you can go into almost anywhere. I know you can get them at your local GameStop or like grocery stores. You can get the $10, $25, and $50 Google Play cards. So it's like, you know, prepaying, you know, for that service. So yeah,
and I think you can set it up that Play Store purchases, you have to have a password to authorize those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
which, if you have children, would be a great idea.
Yes. And that's something I need to investigate. Because, yeah, all of a sudden I was like, what are these things? Oh, I didn't. Whoa, that's weird. Looking at him, just going, oh, your brain. Okay.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's not just apps on Android. I think, in general, you should support, you know, I did a 2-hour LibreOffice presentation this weekend at PenguinCon, and in preparation for that, I downloaded and installed LibreOffice on another machine, and while I was at it, it was like, oh, it's been a while, so, you know, give another $10 to the Open Document Foundation.
There you go.
You know, I'll do that 2 or 3 times a year, just, mm-hmm. You know, I'm doing something, it's like, yeah, throw them a few bucks.
And I think that even though people realize that that's a possibility because the projects like LibreOffice, like the ACF, there are many places that offer these things, these pieces offered for free that are really integral to your day-to-day operations, that you can say, yeah, I'll give it $25, or I'll sign up to be a regular contributor for $2 or $5 or $10 a month. You know,
yeah, and that's another good example, because I'm on the $2 a month plan with ACF.
There you go.
But that's one of several that I've signed up for, that it's, you know, a couple of bucks a month just to support something that I think needs to be supported.
Much like what Dor always advocated when I listened to the show, support those who support you, right, Dor?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I've just randomly a couple times donated to Solus OS, the GNOME project, Audacity, Mumble, basically applications that I knowingly abused on my desktops.
Sure.
After a while, I just realized I'm using this far too much for not giving them any money.
Yeah, and the projects that get the support are the ones that are much more likely to keep going and doing awesome stuff. And the ones that get no support at all, they're going to get discouraged and give up and go home.
Right. So, to be taken away from this, try to get in contact with the companies, developers that are producing these products for you that are worth your while, and do what you can to support them financially, whether actually buying their pro or, you know, complete version of their product, or considering donating to them on a one-time or regular basis. Very good point to bring up, because, yeah, I mean, I've never donated to OpenOffice or to LibreOffice, but I know that I use LibreOffice every day, and I'll definitely kick him some money. I've kicked money to Android developers before, guys on XDA who have posted, you know, some great stuff that have donate links. So yeah, definitely take a step back, see what you can do for the people who are supporting you. All right, Kevin, we're about ready to wrap up. Where can we find you online if we want to investigate your endeavors any further?
Well, in terms of the social networks, Google Plus. That's really the only one I spend any amount of time on. I sort of check my Twitter feed from time to time and my Identica feed, but Google Plus is where I hang out. And then I've got a couple of websites that people might be interested in. One is zwilnik.com, and the other is ahuka.com. They're both places that I put up things that might be of interest to people.
Yeah, I've been to both, and I really liked how you, the last time you were on the show, you referenced a lot of the articles on both the sites, and I've since visited them. And yeah, it is very, 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 very worthwhile content on there, so go check it out for sure.
Thank you.
And Kevin, I hope we can have you on again soon, especially before OLF 2013, because I'll be putting the screws to you for more details as fast as I can get them. Regardless, we will be there. There will be a big Podnets presence there, and a lot of good stuff to come.
When I know a little bit more about who the other keynoters are going to be, I'll let you know.
There you go. Well, several of us put in our vote for the survey that you guys sent out. We voted mm-hmm. For a particular person. It was Jonathan Nato of the ACF. We'll cross our fingers to see if we can get him in there, because okay. That'd be great.
Yeah.
I think Jonathan would be awesome.
And we are definitely biased. We don't make no bones about it.
We are.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's okay.
Okay, cool. Well, we look forward to having you on again soon. Thank you very much for coming, Kevin.
You bet.
All right, Dor, where can we find you?
The easiest way is just podnets.com, doordoorgeek.com. I will say, super quick mention, TinyRSS. If you go to MadMonkey Hosting, and if you get an account there and you get a server there with a shared hosting account on it, you have available to you tools like Fantastico and Softalicious. Right there in Softalicious, you have a one-click automated way to install TinyRSS on your web server.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, speaking of an alternative to Google Reader, yeah, I've tried Feedly. I'm overall pleased with it. But as more people migrate to it, it could fall into much like what you were speaking about, Kevin. You know, everybody's on the one service. What if that goes down again?
Yeah.
But yeah, tiny RSS. Joel McLaughlin spoke about it on Google Plus, and then it sounds like Ryan has set up a great way to set it up through his hosting company. So that's a great option too.
Oh yeah. Basically, I feel very comfortable with saying anything ever even offered via a one-click install, it seems like Ryan has integrated in MadMonkey Hosting. If there's something that's not there, I would honestly be shocked to find it, because everything I've looked for has been here.
If there's something that isn't there, I'll get his personal email and put it in the show notes of the next show, and we can all spam him until it happens.
Good man.
There you go. He just got very worried right now listening to this episode.
Good.
All right, cool. Thank you very much, Dor. I, of course, am Cody Cooper. You can just hit me up on Google Plus, Cody Cooper on Google Plus. Thank you to everyone who's been adding me as of late. I try to touch base with you individually as best as I possibly can, but do not hesitate to ask me any questions while you're on there. That is primarily where I am most of the day, and the main social network that I utilize. So we appreciate all the feedback there, getting a lot of good conversations started, a lot of good information from you folks who are reading it that I may not have scraped from any other site. So thank you very much for your involvement there. As always, please check out the ACF.co. That's, of course, the Accessible Computing Foundation, run by our good friend Jonathan Nato, who is trying to bring accessible software to those who need it most, to those people with disabilities. He has a fantastic Linux distribution named Sonar, which has a variety of software on it in order to help people who are either blind. He has a specific font on there for people with dyslexia. Lots of good webcam integration within that distribution, so check that out. Please support Podnuts. If you're already shopping on Amazon, please use the podnuts.com/Amazon link. We also have the /Newegg/eBay links as well. Podnuts.com/deals. We have a lot of good partnerships with a lot of good products there. Check that out. And that basically wraps up the show for this week. So please remember, Linux is not just for the rest of us. It is for all of us. Good night.